I got a lot of responses back that say, okay, well, let's talk about your goals. What are your goals? And it's like, well, isn't that obvious? Look at my business for 2 minutes and then just give me an example.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Business of Freelancing podcast, where we help you get better clients, make more money, and live a happier and a healthier life freelancing. I'm your host, Brendan Dunn, and today I sat down with Dave Nevogt. Dave is the founder, one of the co-founders, rather, of Hubstaff.com, which helps teams basically communicate virtually. I mean, it's kind of like a team management platform for the internet. But the reason I wanted to bring him on is I've had this kind of this idea that on the podcast, I like to bring in experts. I like to bring in people who are really just doing amazing at building a consulting business, their freelancing business. People who are experts at certain niches or certain topics. But on the other side of the coin, I've always wanted to bring on more people who are hiring people like us, you know, actual clients. And, you know, I wanted to hear from them in their own words why they, you know, why they hire the way they hire, why they turn away certain candidates. What's going through their minds when they come up with a project and ultimately go and look for people who can work in the project for them. So Dave uses freelancers extensively at Hubstaff, and he has a lot of experience in vetting and basically recruiting, you know, people like us, you know, web professionals, developers, designers, writers, and so on. And in this discussion I had with him, we really dug into what's going through his head when he's making these decisions. Like, why does he hire and why doesn't he hire? So I think you're going to really enjoy a lot of what we talk about in this conversation. But before we jump into it, I want to tell you a bit about the upcoming class of Double Your Freelancing Clients. So we still got about a month left of the current class. And if you were on my list back when I launched it in early February, you know this is a once a year class that I offer. It's different. It's different than Double Your Freelancing or anything like that because it's very personal, I guess. Everyone in the class is assigned a dedicated mentor. I offer myself usually twice, sometimes more a week, in live office hours where you can come in, ask me any question whatsoever, get live advice from me. And it's backed by a 20-module curriculum of video courses, of video content that covers all the different channels available for getting new work, whether it be networking, cold contacting, sites like Elance or Upwork or Odesk, or you know, using email courses to drive people toward becoming qualified leads, to blogging, towards social. I mean, we cover just about every available channel. And the next class is going to be kicking off in January, but I wanted to tell you about one quick change that's going to be happening with the 2016 class. And that is, the way it works now is everyone gets a mentor, and the communication, though, happens over email. And one thing I learned doing this, you know, with this kind of guinea pig class was that not everyone was really staying on top of that kind of that mentor relationship. You know, a lot of people were falling through the cracks because it's email, because it's not live. There were just a lot of inconsistencies. So one thing that we're going to be doing, if you've been following along, is instead of it being, you know, everyone's still going to get that mentor, that dedicated person who is I've trusted to be in charge of you as a student. But on top of that, there will be biweekly masterminds where the mentor is the leader of the group. They're in charge of getting people to show up, getting people, you know, recording the goals, the big takeaways from each session. But during these biweekly masterminds, you as a student will have an opportunity to talk about what you've been working on related to the course for the previous 2 weeks, where you're stuck, what you're getting hung up on, whatever else. And you'll get advice both from the mentor and from the other students in the room or virtual room. And then you'll talk about what you plan on doing for the next 2 weeks. And I think this change is going to really make not only it's kind of like if the course is the curriculum, the textbook, even though it's video, if you think about it like a college textbook, and the office hours is your ability to meet personally with the teacher and get advice specific to you and your situation, this new change will kind of add a study group element on top of it, where you'll have a group of a few other people and your mentor who you will meet with every 2 weeks and kind of hash through your progress through the course. I just think it's going to be a huge change. And on top of that, there's also a private community just for students, where between all of those mastermind calls, between the office hours, between all of that, it's very active. People are there sharing their updates, sharing their progress, sharing interesting articles, and so on. So again, if you're at all interested in joining the next class, I'm going to start promoting, just because it's going to require a chunk of time from you. I mean, it's not something, it's not just, join course, get results. I mean, there's effort that needs to be put into it on your part. And the mistake I think I made last year was I just kind of launched it out of the blue without really telling people that they need a budget, 6 months of their time. So, if being able to systematically increase the way that you get clients and master the way that you kind of acquire qualified leads is something that interests you, keep an eye out for when I do start to actually announce the course, because I do want people to be prepared, because again, it's going to take a lot of time, or not a lot of time, just a good amount of ongoing time, an hour every 2 weeks at a minimum to participate in the class. So again, if that's you, keep that on your radar. I'm probably going to be opening up registration sometime in December, and then the class will be kicking off early January. And I know it's still the summertime, but at this point, I really do want to make sure that the people, because we had some issues where people joined and they just realized midway through that they really, they kind of jumped the gun and didn't have the time to really participate. So I want to make sure everyone can participate who, wants to be able to join, and that's going to require some time. So if that's you, start thinking in terms of, can you be dedicating an hour plus every 2 weeks to your business? And if that's you, keep an eye out on your inbox if you're on my list. If you're not on my list, you're going to want to go to doubleyourfreelancing.com/newsletter and get on it. All right. So with that out of the way, let's jump directly into my discussion today with Dave. I want to introduce you guys to Dave Nabote. Dave is the founder or co-founder of Hubstaff, which is a virtual team management tool, I believe, right? It does automatic time tracking and activity tracking and everything. And right. I wanted to bring him on, and what we're going to be talking about is Dave's hired a lot of freelancers. I don't know the count. I guess we'll get into that. But, you've worked with a lot of people, some good, many not so good. And I wanted to just get you on and to kind of like vent, I guess, in a way, about what are the things that you as somebody, you run a software company, you hire consultants and freelancers and everything else. What are the things that usually get you first off to hire somebody and secondly to keep them around? And conversely, what are the things you're looking that are red flags for you when talking with somebody? So Dave, I just want to thank you for and welcome you to the business of freelancing.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I do hire a lot of freelancers and I work with a lot of freelancers. I've been doing it now for, 15 plus years. So it's always had remote teams. I look for very specific kind of personality traits. Foremost, you're always looking for people that, are going to make your life as the business owner or the client easier. You're looking for solutions. You're not looking for a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. So when I first, it's very interesting hiring right now for a remote position, content marketing, editor, blogger, that kind of thing. And, I put out about 50 responses. I put out ads on AngelList. I put out ads on LinkedIn. I put out ads on a few other places. And I talk with people And I've got a whole process that I go through when I hire a freelancer, when I hire for a position. And in general, I mean, it's very interesting when you see the different kind of responses come back in, because some people are automatically reading your job posting, mm-hmm. or the posting for the job that's open, and they're asking questions that are going to benefit them, you know. Right. And but in doing that, they don't realize, and I think many people think that they're showing interest in the position, but what that's really doing, and this is an important distinction, is they are putting work back on the business owner or the right. client. They've got to go, the clients then got to go through and answer all these questions. And that, and sometimes that doesn't even happen. So lots of times when I get a lot of questions off the bat, I just don't even respond back, because that means, you know, 20 minutes of work for me to answer these questions. What I'm looking for very specifically is somebody that's going to read that posting, take initiative, and give me some solutions, analyze my business, show some initiative, and give me a very short plan of action that you would take. And that shows to me that you're a very go-getter, and that's what I'm looking for.
Let me ask you this. Say you posted a job position for conversion optimization for your site, and right. Somebody then goes, looks at your site, analyzes what they can see surface level of your funnels, of everything you've got going on. But they respond with that kind of like the detail that shows that they've done some homework, that they've done their research, I guess. But then they yep. ask follow-up questions that'll help them better, you know, understand the things that are below the surface. I mean, what's your thought on that? Is that something that you're then more, I mean, because I mean, obviously, if somebody doesn't know what your conversion rate is, let's say, or
yeah,
I mean, right. they need to know some data to get prescribe a solution, right?
Yeah, of course. You know, of course. Yeah. And that's not. Yeah, that's not really what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I get you, and that's good too, because that shows that yes, they need some follow up data, and everyone realistic understands that. But what I'm talking about is more like, you know, kind of like when they don't provide that analysis and they just ask the question.
Just kind of like stock questions that are boilerplate that they use for everyone, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm talking about like maybe 120 word response back to me that's. That's mostly questions. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a bad sign for me.
Right.
I'm looking for like I'm looking for like more of like a 300 word response. That's mostly an action plan with some questions.
Okay. So let's say somebody does that. They kind of, now they're through that stage of your funnel, right? They made it in. What are you typically like? I mean, what happens next?
Next, to provide some data on that, I mean, I'm dealing with freelancers that are pretty high level, right? On AngelList, for example, and that's just a tip in my from me to your audience, is that AngelList is a great place to go, because I think that it's seen as higher level, and right. it's just, there's a lot of companies on there that are looking for, that are posting jobs that, I mean, I get a lot of responses back when I post there, but in general, the dollar amounts are higher that I'm willing to pay for somebody on there, because I understand right away that they're kind of at a spot where they do not where they're just higher level, right? So I'll just leave it at that. So I guess.
Isn't AngelList for like plumbers and stuff? Do people who do web work go on there too?
Oh, AngelList, no, AngelList is for startups and funding, and they've got a whole job posting session.
Really? I always thought it was for like plumbers and roofers and, you know.
No, I think you're talking about
AngelList. I'm sorry. God, Angie's List I'm thinking of. Yeah, AngelList. Okay. Uh-oh. The funding thing. Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
Yes. But they've done it. They've really started to introduce jobs into their business model, and I think it's almost like the majority of the business model now.
Right. But those are more full-time jobs, not as much for freelancers.
No, they have totally remote contracting. No,
oh, do they? Okay.
I 100%. Yeah. But anyway, you know, so the next step in the funnel for me is that I will basically ask them for examples. That's the next. So somebody that gives me examples, that's a really great sign as well. And so my advice there would be to basically have those examples already queued up in you know, not like I would suggest just linking to them from an email or something like that, not like in a resume, because typically me as the hirer, I don't dig that far down. Like I'll look at a resume, but I don't go, you know, you got to keep in mind I'm getting 50 responses. So like, you know, just linking in the email is probably more effective, and linking to your best stuff. Not like I don't want some, again, if somebody gives me a portfolio, if I ask for examples and somebody just says, hey, here's my portfolio.
Right.
To me, that signals a little bit of laziness. It signals just, here's my portfolio. It's across the board. It's the same for everybody. And you go in there now and you dig.
Yeah.
What I'm looking for is somebody to say, here's a specific example of something that I wrote that's related to your market.
Right.
And the type of content that you produce.
And I assume you'd want, I mean, if it's with a past client, like if it's something that they worked on that was with past clients who's similar to you, I mean, would you want to see like results?
Yeah, I mean, it's either something, it doesn't have to be for a client. It could even be for themselves or something, even if it's something that they didn't even write, just the ability, just the thought process of saying, hey, this is what I think is related to your market. It's I've done it, or my buddy did it, or I could do something like this, or this is what I envision. But obviously it's better if they wrote it, but anything that is, you know, related to what I'm looking to do, I would pay attention to.
Right. Right. So you're not looking for just a list of like URLs. You want actual, like you want somebody to actually process that, their portfolio first, and present to you kind of
exactly
what matters to you. Right.
Exactly.
How, I mean, when people do that, is it usually just, you know, here's a few, let's say it's, go back to the conversion rate example. Here's a few websites I've, you know, done CRO on, and they list, let's say three. How do you feel about that versus, you know, here are three examples and here's a, you know, a one sentence description of like kind of the, what effect it's had on the client's business. Is that more attractive to you, or does it really not matter?
Yeah, that's pretty attractive to me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because my next step would be that short email that you just said, that response back would be, I know what I'm talking about. Here's my examples. And what that does for me is it gets the discussion engine going.
I respond back to that. Right. And it's basically saying to you, here's some people who've hired me who've gotten more money back in return. I mean, which you're looking for an investment.
Hey, I got to go back one second here. One thing I wanted to say that I didn't say, I got sidetracked, is that like when we're talking about the example stuff, you said what's the next step in the funnel? And the next step in the funnel for like 90% of these people is to ask for examples because they don't provide them. So providing them up front is beneficial.
And that's with that introductory email, right?
Yep.
Okay. What, let's talk now, you know, say somebody's gone through that and they've, they've kind of passed through that threshold. What's typically next? I mean, I assume things get into more, you know, you step out of email and get more into phone calls or something. How does that transition work?
A Skype discussion, pretty much like what we're having right now. Mm-hmm. And it would be, I'm looking for a few things there. I'm looking for flexibility. I'm not looking for, you know, like, flexibility on their part, you know, like, I mean, in general, like the first few times that I put out will work for them. I mean, it's not, and being able to schedule it pretty quickly. I'm looking for, and I should say as well, like if I get 50 responses, typically only two or three get to this point. I don't have time to have like seven interviews, you know? So it's like two or three will get to this point, and I'm very hesitant. That it's a good point too. A lot of the responses back that I get are, hey, let's hop on the phone or let's type on Skype to have this conversation. I think that people look at that when they write back to me, and they look at that as, hey, I'm being friendly, I'm being proactive. And also, but I know what they're really doing, which is that, you know, they're really trying to get me on the phone because they think that they're, you know, chances of selling me are higher.
Go up a lot. Yeah.
But and that's not the case.
And it's usually,
because never get to that.
Yeah. And having been on the receiving end of that, it's usually, I mean, what I'm thinking is, first off, I don't know you well enough to kind of give away a valuable slot in my calendar yet. And that's an open-ended thing, like a, hey, we should chat. I mean, it's kind of like when I get a email and somebody's like, can I pick your brain? It's, you know, I mean, it's, yeah. So one of the things I've always, you know, I hire a good amount of freelancers for my current business, and I've also hired freelancers to be subcontractors with my agency. And the thing that I've always looked for, and this came more through experience than anything else, is my biggest enemy are people who are flaky and people who do not understand kind of business, I guess. You know, my business, they don't get how timelines and budget constraints work. And so I was always looking more for, you know, it's great to have somebody who's amazingly technical and really talented and everything else. But if you're talented and technical, but you don't understand constraints and you don't understand how to be reliable and you're not making it obvious when you sell yourself to me that you are those things, you know, to me, that's a big red flag. And I'd love to hear your input on that too.
I mean, I think what you're saying is true. I typically look for skills over that. What do you mean when you say budgets and constraints? Like what are some examples?
You know, a lot of the times when I'm hiring on a project or I'm hiring somebody to be a subcontractor, more so on a consulting engagement, I've worked with a lot of people who are just really poor at communication and setting expectations. And, you know, I'm assuming that they're moving along steadily and I find out otherwise. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of people who are really poor communicators, I think is what it really boils down to.
Yes. Yes. I see. I understand. Yep. And that would be totally. Yeah. And that's like nine. Once you get into the role, I mean, yeah, like that's number one, proactive communication. I've got this article that I wrote about basically what it takes to be an awesome, you know, remote contractor. And that's number one on the list is, you know, like proactive communication, even if it's like sending like a few sentences every night when you get done with your work for a client, that will go so far in helping that client retain you on a long-term basis. Just a few sentences of what you got done, a summary of your day, and what you maybe plan on doing tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. So how do you plan on, or how do you sell that before? I mean, it's obvious if you end up working with that person, they determine pretty quickly, probably, how good of a communicator you are, but how can you sell yourself on that prior to having a contract signed?
I think even saying it that you plan on doing that, or this is how I typically work, will go massively far.
So basically just tell the person your process, I guess, right? Like your working style.
Right.
Yeah. Instead of just being like, you know, selling yourself on purely your technical credentials, you want to talk a bit about, you know, kind of like, hey, you know, after we work together, we'll have one phone meeting once a week, you know, and we will, you'll get an email from me at the end of each day with a short overview of what got done, what's ready for review, and what I'm going to be working on next.
I mean, doesn't that sound awesome to you as somebody that's
yeah.
That's,
I mean, that's exactly what I'm looking. That's the people that I do hire end up usually saying that or something like
that. Exactly. Yeah,
exactly. And that's why I'm always, you know, I mean, leveling up your ability to be a professional, I think, is so much more, I think, than, you know, investing in further technical education, or I mean, all that's important, obviously, but yeah, I think I've just hired so many people who are just totally clueless when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that this is like a big. This was like a big stress. This is the reason why I built Hubstaff in the first place. What you just talked about,
right?
It's just, you know, it's just the non-ability to manage my remote team and just continually having to chase things down as the business owner. And I just, the amount of stress when you have like 20 people you're chasing things down from, it just, it's too hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, and I think it boils down to something, or goes back to something you said at the beginning of our talk, which is, you know, your primary goal is to get more things off your plate. And if you're now micromanaging, then that's more work for you. And your purpose in hiring somebody is not to put more work on your plate.
Yeah, totally. And very related, you know, to the conversation currently is that, like, I think that if you can, so what you said is like, you know, your business knowledge goes further than, you know, your furthering your technical abilities and that kind of thing. I think that there's another subset of that, which is that I look for people that have a breadth of understanding of the overall space. So if I'm hiring somebody for marketing or content development, you know, like they need to really understand social, they need to understand a little bit of SEO, they need to understand, you know, content, they need to understand conversion rate, they need to understand analytics, right? So they need to understand all that stuff. I mean, at a surface level, they need to at least be able to talk the game,
right?
You know? And so what I would say is, like, I see a lot of people like, oh, you know, like I got probably 20 responses back to this one position that all they do is write. And to me, I can't hire that person because I'm looking for somebody that at least has some understanding. And so, like, if you think about all the blogs that are out there that are available for reading, you don't need to like go to college for this stuff or even buy a course, spend any money. You just, you know, go out and find some influential blogs that are giving this stuff away for free and just learn to talk the language and put a little effort into understanding the very basics of this, you know, of what's going on, you know, in those different categories.
I think too, I mean, to go back to the example of writing, you know, if you hire somebody to write content on your blog, you really don't care about the words, right? Like, I mean, obviously you're hiring a writer, but what you really care about is what that blog post will end up doing as it relates entirely to your business. So
you need
to have an understanding of, well, what is the purpose of, like, why would somebody hire me to write 500 words? And why they would is they're hoping that that generates more leads for them or, you know, more social shares or whatever it might be, right? And
exactly.
People who get that are the ones that, because I mean, ultimately, the way, and this is what I teach actually, you know, on my site, what a lot of people, you know, let's say you're a blogger, right? You typically would think, well, I'm being hired because of my ability to write words. But, you know, would you spend money for 500 words? You probably, you know, words are meaningless unless they're fit into a bigger, broader context. And in this case, it's, you know, somebody who understands why they're being hired to write words and they communicate that proactively. To me, at least, they're a surer bet in terms of, like, if I spend money on this person, are they actually going to deliver? You know, it's one thing to have a technical delivery. Like, yes, they technically gave me 500 well-written words. But if it's not the right delivery in that it doesn't accomplish whatever business goal you have for those 500 words, it's pointless. Right.
Right.
So, yeah.
And so like, and a perfect example of that is like I got a lot of responses back that say, okay, well, let's talk about your goals. What are your goals? And it's like, well, isn't that obvious? So like, look at my business for 2 minutes. And then, you know, just give me an example. Say, you know, if your goal is to increase blog subscribers, this is the kind of content I think might work. If your goal is to increase, you know, conversions or increase the width of your funnel in terms of the software you sell, then here's some content that might work. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, understanding that, not only understanding there is a business goal behind what you're doing, but also taking a stab at least at like trying to understand what that goal is and not just ask me, what are your goals? So I have to explain it back to you.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it should be obvious to kind of, there's really no excuse, I think, for most people not to be able to reverse engineer a potential client's business model, right? I mean, it's pretty obvious for the most part, at least. So what are some other like issues that you've ran into besides communication or maybe related to communication that have caused you to either fire, you know, freelancers or, you know, severely limit the amount of trust you put on them?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think so. So another thing is quality. So I think that we are coming to an age where only quality trumps everything. And so as a freelancer, if you spend a little bit more time, I think the vast majority of businesses, and I think, you know, I think you'd probably agree with me here. I don't know. I haven't had the discussion with you, but I think that the vast majority of business are they say up front, hey, we've got to get this done very fast, or they've got – some businesses say that. I don't say that, but some do probably. We've got to get this done fast or whatever. But in the end of the day, if you go and you provide a very quality piece of content or very quality workmanship, and you show that you care about your craft and you put a lot of thought and effort into this, even if it takes more time, that employer or that client's going to be very happy with you at the end of the day.
Right.
Even if it takes more time. And so you can come back and you can say, this took more time, it's going to cost more money, but look at the quality. And I think that for me, what's generally ended relationships is when people don't ever get – when I continually have to like correct things or come back with different you know, with five or six things that are the same almost every time, that just shows like a lack of caring, I think, on the contractor's part. And that generally ends a relationship.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it all goes back to communication and setting the right expectations. I mean, I found that, you know, to go back to the whole, like, you know, a lot of us are like, well, you know, we end up finding out that the work we're doing is actually going to take a lot longer than we initially thought. And here's why. But often what ends up happening is the freelancer in this case doesn't actually proactively and constantly communicate, hey, by the way, we could, you know, I've thought of a way to make this actually better, or I've thought of a way to make this a more complete solution. Right. And instead they wait right to the end. And there's, you know, when I'm on the receiving end of that, it's kind of like, this is the example I love to use. It's, you know, if you've ever traveled somewhere, let's say, and you get to the airport and you get a cab and you need to go downtown, you know, it sucks when the meter's broken, right? And you end up at your hotel and the cabbie is like, yeah, that'll be $50. And you're like, where do you get that number from, right? Like, where, you know, you're just pulling it out of thin air. But when I can instead, I like having that meter, which is communication, showing me, oh, look, I'm in a traffic jam. Of course, yeah, it's causing my bill to go up higher, or we're needing to make this detour, or something like that, right? So, totally. I mean, that's how I look at communication, which is the people who talk to me, the people who are showing me insights into how they work, what they're thinking, how they're proactively coming up with even maybe a better outcome than I initially thought was possible. I mean, I'm willing to then open up the timeline constraints, open up the budget constraints, because I'm getting a better product at the end of the day.
Yeah. And you're adding value to your business.
Right. Right. Exactly. So, I mean, I think it just all goes back to communication. Surprise, surprise.
Well, yeah. And it goes back to, you know, the freelancer or the, you know, they've got to have the skills to do that, but they've also got to have that, the mindset of quality. Everything is quality. And I think I just think that's important, because I think that we're coming to a point where transparency matters more, where everything's getting harder to market, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if they understand these general mindsets, that are happening in the business world in general, I think that goes a long way when you're talking to a client, when you have that mindset, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we're running out of the end of time, or we're running out of time rather, but do you have any other parting thoughts, given, you know, my audience are mainly remote freelancers and, you know, they're competing often with other remote freelancers. What are, you know, any other things we haven't covered yet that you think are really important in terms of, ultimately having a better shot at winning a contract?
Yeah. So we covered quality, very important. We covered the general kind of communication, the first off communication
with having the client. Having a process in place and communicating the process and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the only other thing is, you know, I guess I would say just make it personal. You know, if I understand a little bit about your life, if I understand, you know, do you have kids? Do you, a picture of you, you know, any kind of, like when I, for example, when I see a LinkedIn profile without a picture, automatically I don't even respond, right. You know? So just things like that, you know, adding a picture to your resume, your profile, just making things personal, I think helps a lot too, because it helps me see you as, you know, a real person. And, I care about those things with my people.
Right. And I would say also when it comes to the way you communicate via email, let's say, you know, anytime I've posted, usually what ends up happening is I posted a job up online somewhere, I'll get, let's say 100, you know, 100 responses, and 80% of them are just some stock letter thing, right?
That is,
I mean, if somebody would just take the time, and I've done this myself, like with PlanScope, for instance, my software product, I've tried to manually reach out to new trials. And in my template that I send them, the first line is the fill-in thing is like, insert 5 seconds of Google research here, right? Where, you know, I'll look up their company, look up their agency, you know, I'll start a thing with, you know, hey, Dave, oh, saw you're in Melbourne, Australia. Awesome. I've never been there, but I checked out your site. Really gorgeous site, blah, blah, blah. And then I get into the usual stuff, I would say. That alone, the people I do that, like response rates are 50%+ higher just by me literally Googling them for maybe 30 seconds.
Yeah, totally. I'm actually going to take that and implement that. And I'm glad that you said that because I have a software, you know, and one thing that we're struggling with is onboarding. And so I'm going to take my own advice there and your advice and implement that myself as well.
It works.
Totally true. Because, you know, it just, if you can make something personal, I see you're in Indianapolis or I see, you know, just, yeah, something that will resonate with them on a personal level. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just, in terms of response rates and interaction, it just like ROI wise, it's huge.
You know what it does? It shows that the person is doing their homework. It shows that they are motivated enough to dig in, to understand at least the very core of what you are, you know?
Right.
And that motivation alone is enough to get a response in most cases.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the people who I end up who email me, you know, cold, and I end up actually doing what they want are the ones who often will send me something and say, you know, give me advice or give me input on like maybe a blog post I recently wrote or email course that I have up and tell me like what they thought, what they, you know, their issue with maybe something. At least I'm getting something of value from them, right? Like they're giving me something first before they're asking for anything in response.
Yeah, they become like your fans. That thing that Kevin Kelly wrote, where it's like your 1,000 true fans. You know, mm-hmm. they really become, I think the impression is a lot higher.
Right. No. Absolutely. So, yeah. I mean, I think it all goes back to just really spending some time actually caring, like looking at mm-hmm. like who is this person, what is their business, what do they do. How can I read between the lines of their job post to really figure out what's going on if they're not overt about it and, you know, really come up with a solution for them that helps their business.
Totally.
Cool. So Dave, best place to reach you is probably what, hubstaff.com?
Yeah. I've got a blog that I publish a lot of this, you know, I publish a lot of information on remote teamwork and that kind of thing. I publish a growth blog that talks about how we grow our business. And that's all on blog.hubstaff.com. My email address is dave@hubstaff.com. And, my Twitter is dnavote. That's about it.
Yeah. We didn't get a chance to really talk much about remote, but, you guys should definitely check out Dave's blog because he has a lot to say and a lot of advice around, because I know a big struggle for a lot of freelancers is convincing their clients to let them work from home or remotely or whatever else. So definitely you've got a lot of really good insight and perspectives onto that too. So Dave, just want to thank you again for coming on and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. See ya.
Okay. That wraps up this week's interview. I really hope you enjoy the content that's coming out of the podcast. I've got more ratings and reviews than ever on iTunes. And so I just want to thank you. If you've gone ahead and did that, it just, you know, waking up in the moment and seeing that review count go up and just hearing somebody saying how much they enjoy the podcast, how they think it's a must listen for anyone who's freelancing, that sort of stuff honestly just makes my day. So if you haven't left that review yet, I'd love it if you could go into iTunes, search Business of Freelancing and leave a review. I'd appreciate it. All right, well, we will be back next week for another exciting episode of the Business of Freelancing podcast.